2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah help.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for, the sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
If we're going to take the next step offensively in our evolution, it is be more big play oriented on the outside. That's the next phase and really the final phase. You know, we've always had a strong run game. The action pass game is good, the intermediate game. But we've got to hit on some of those deep balls and be more explosive on the outside. If we can do that, then look out.
Ooh, you got to look out from Coach Whittingham on that one, too. I mean, we heard that clip about going to that next phase of getting that big play-oriented team onto the field, see if the ball's going to be in the air a little bit more. But you love to hear that. You love to hear that there's some change maybe for a guy who's been sitting in one spot when it comes to the offense side of things. We'll see what they can do now that they have a Cam Rising and a Devon Vele maybe who's going to be that wide receiver one who can go up and get it. We'll see what that big play looks like. Joining us right now on the program, by the way, it's Unrivaled, brought to you by G2G, the good-to-go protein bar that you get in your grocer's refrigerated section or at the Holiday Oil or at a Maverick. It's the protein bar that is complete and amazing.
Wherever you get it, because they're
tasty stuff.
Amazing.
Tasty stuff. So let's kick things off. Sean O'Connell's going to join us here for the cut right here at the top of the hour. Let's do it.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
Cut presented by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org. OC, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us, man.
Thanks for having me, fellas. How are things?
Yeah, we're fantastic.
We're eating G2G bars. Life's amazing.
Not in the studio, though, because that's not allowed.
No.
Don't tell anybody that we were either, okay? So, OC, we're fascinated by, I think, what Kyle Whittingham, you know, has said already in camp where he's like, hey, I want to have some big plays. And everybody kind of furiously starts writing down going, this is not something that we've seen before. So what do you do to kind of get to that point? Or what are they going to do? Or is it going to be just saying, Andy Ludwig, let's start throwing that ball up in the air and let's start getting this thing going a little bit more than we have in the past?
Well, you can't just do that if you don't have the talent on the receiving end. And this has been something we've talked about, something I talk about all the time on my own Pac-12 show. You know, the next phase that we just heard Kyle Whittingham in that soundbite mention requires talent at that end of the field, right? We know that Cam Rising's capable. We think that the running game is going to be solid. We think that the offensive line is going to offer him protection. That should get teams to load the box. You know, you got 8-9 guys in the box. Hopefully you get some favorable matchups for your wide receivers. But at the end of the day, you have to have guys that can go out there and win the battle, that can either jump higher or have longer arms or just better instincts for the ball. They can catch the contested pass. And that's where those big plays come in. Or obviously if you're fast enough, you just – absolutely, you know, get behind those safeties and let them air it out. And I think there's a couple guys with that kind of speed on this team, but it's a to be determined because we haven't seen it really since the Utes joined the Pac-12, where you have a bulk of favorable matchups when it comes to your wide receivers and an opposition's defensive backs.
So locally here, Cam Rising's thought of very highly, had a tremendous year a year ago, really turned everything around for Utah. What do you think the perception of him is, maybe on a broader scale? You know, how are people outside of us in our rose-colored glasses looking at Cam Rising?
Most of them, right, most of the writers in the know, football writers in the know, will say that he's sort of like the second tier of college football quarterbacks this year. There's like the mega high expectations, Spencer Rattler once again, Caleb Williams, who obviously transferred into USC. There's all these guys that are in that sort of Heisman or bust category, Bryce Young at Alabama. And then that, whether that's three names or five names or even 10 names, that most people usually have Cam Rising in like the very promising, let's see what this guy can do. He's on a good team. Does he have the arm strength and talent to really elevate them to the next level? And I think he does. And I think that this team has, we all saw it. They respond so well to him. He's one of the most popular guys on the entire team, if not the most popular guy on the entire team, which is like super ideal to have your quarterback be that well-loved and respected. And he talks about his own arm and shoulder health was not 100% last year, and we didn't really notice that necessarily. So if he's got more zip on the ball this year, then hopefully he can rise to the level that some of the national writers say that he's capable of, or even above the level that folks locally think he's capable of.
When we've been watching some of the stuff coming out of camp, and there's not much to see, obviously Utah shuts it down pretty well. And, you know, they've got a scrimmage on Saturday. In these early scrimmages in camp, like, what's the real focus, and or what maybe has changed over the years and what the focus is in an opening scrimmage like this?
Well, what's changed most over the years is the way that, you know, the established starters are bubble wrapped. And I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Right? It's always been the case that guys that you know what you have are not asked to do much. But because of the way that some, you know, bad luck has worked out in the past for Utah, we're not asking established starters to play spring ball at all. And these scrimmages where you're live go, right? And Kyle Whittingham even makes the quarterbacks live in some of these scrimmages. I don't know if he will in this weekend, but you know, you really started to bubble wrap the guys that are integral to the success of your football team. And with that comes an acknowledgement and a nod for the whole team to recognize, like, wow, Clark Phillips is that dude. We know he's good enough. He doesn't have to prove it anymore. Junior Tafuna is that guy. He doesn't have to prove it. We're going to make sure that some overeager freshman doesn't roll up on his legs. And so we're just not going to even play him in this. And that's a thing that, you know, you have to walk a very delicate line, and Scott knows this better than I do, where the younger players and, you know, the other starters on the team, for that matter, want to know that those guys are being asked to work to the same level that they are. But being the kind of elder statesman status and knowing that that's something they can aspire to and work toward, and I think that's the biggest change, is that there's an acknowledgement now that not all youths are created equal, and they don't even pretend.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, it's an interesting observation, and I have to wonder, with a kind of a typically easy non-conference schedule that kind of builds as it goes along, you have the luxury of doing that because you get these so-called bubble wrap guys playing experience, and they play themselves into that game speed and that conference speed. I just wonder, with such a big game at Florida this year, right out of the gates, if there might not be a change, you know, that these starters, these first line guys, get more reps, so that when they hit the ground running in game one, that they're up to that speed, up to that challenge.
You bring up a great point. I mean, you can't really afford to start slow in the swamp. So those guys, we talk about it all the time. It's an old adage. The only way to get in football shape is to play football, right? So you can't overdo it on protecting guys and resting guys to keep them fresh, because they need to be in shape and they need to be ready to go. And especially with certain individuals on this team who maybe didn't have a great spring and maybe didn't come into spring football as prepared as maybe they should have been, now you're wondering, is he going to be ready to go in the swamp? He's going to last four quarters in the swamp. So you're absolutely right, Scott. Like, it might be a little bit different this year, because you cannot afford, under any circumstances, a slow start, not with the expectations of this football team.
Sean O'Connell joining us right now on the program as we discuss a little bit of what Utah's future holds for this year in the Pac-12 going forward. You can hear his show every day, Sirius XM, Pac-12 Today. You guys, I mean, we crossed paths in Los Angeles on a maybe what was the most weird media day that we've ever had, obviously, because it's just so – I mean, the setting was – I mean, they've always kind of been in these weird chic areas, but like that – being like in the VIP lounge at the club doing these interviews was kind of weird. And then also just the vibe where you've got the USC and UCLA guys walking around and everybody kind of side-glancing them and going, what is going on? So now that we've had a couple of weeks to kind of digest it, what's the vibe now that the TV deal with the Big 12 on ESPN or the Big 10 on ESPN fell through, and other developments there that I know that George Kliavkoff and the conference is looking at to see how that's going to shake out for them TV-wise?
Well, that was good news, right? That the Big 10 is not a negotiating partner for ESPN anymore, because everyone knows ESPN needs inventory, and now the Pac-12 is next up for their television deal. So can they get a little bit better offer? And they've extended their exclusive negotiating window to try and make something happen with ESPN. And so you were feeling pretty good about that for a few days. And then I'm not super individually worried about this, but then Michael Schill, the Oregon president, today announced that he himself is leaving to go be the president of a Big Ten university. He's going to leave the University of Oregon for Northwestern. And you're just like, wait, what's going on here? You know, because the university presidents and the chancellors and all that, they're the people that are making these are the power players that make these moves happen. So if this is a guy who's got deep affection for the University of Oregon, which you assume he does, even if he's leaving, now he's going to be in the Big Ten. And so he's probably going to be advocating in Big Ten rooms for Oregon to be invited. And it's just like, what is happening? You know, there's still not perfect clarity on whether or not the Big Ten is truly done expanding. But I think what's happened with Notre Dame and with their athletic director's comments with Notre Dame saying, like, what we have seen shake out is kind of validating for Notre Dame's independence. That, to me, is good news for the Pac-12 conference, or for the remaining 10 members of the Pac-12 conference. But the beauty of this situation is we are 23 days, actually 21 days, right, when you talk about that early game.
Yeah.
Away from getting off of the television market conversation and the television deal conversation, and we'll be talking about why Arizona State can't get a pass rush this year, and we'll talk about why Utah should have been in better shape going to the swamp. you don't like the UPS brown.
I think they're trying to pitch it as like hey man, we blend into the sand. This is just like the desert, and you're like, this is awful. Adidas, you struck out, buddy.
Yeah, you can talk all the earth tones you want. They look hideous. That's all I guess.
You don't like khaki uniforms.
They're like, what do you have?
What could be a Jim Harbaugh team?
Yeah, what do you have in like a grout shade? Something that like could really look good between the tiles.
So, kind of getting back to the Pac-12 and its relevance. The commissioner George Kliavkoff talked about being aggressive and expanding, but listed a list of criteria of this is what it would take. And you look at his criteria, and there's nobody out there that fits the criteria, right? Except for one team. And I brought this up on our show here, and that's UCLA. And there was some really funny conversations going about UCLA and how you get rumblings that a lot of people inside the school, a lot of alumni are not happy with it. Is it possible for the Pac-12 to maybe court and try to talk UCLA off the ledge? And even though it's not USC, it's still a presence in that Southern California market, and it's still a brand.
I don't think there's a possibility of that. And I believe George Klyavkov and everyone else who said, yeah, there's a lot of people in that UCLA family that are upset about this move. I believe that is 100% true. But what's ignored is the number of people in the UCLA family that are very happy about this move and are very happy about the idea that $100 million a year is going to be going to the athletic department, that now UCLA basketball, one of the national blue bloods, is going to be playing every year against Big Ten powers and, you know, in a deeper, better conference for basketball, right? And there are a lot of UCLA Bruins, even powerful rich ones, who unfortunately, you know, hold the puppet strings and all this stuff, who are very pleased with the move. So plenty that are mad, but maybe even a larger number that are happy about it. And that's not even to mention all of the time, expense, effort that would have to be spent on suing UCLA to keep them in place, right? And that doesn't make for a good marriage, a good partnership moving forward. And it would cost, I think, the conference too much time and money and energy that could be spent on solidifying their position elsewhere. UCLA wants to go. The significant other that wants to break up with you, you don't beg them and then sue them to stay. That's not healthy.
Well, part of the deal is, too, I think a lot of folks look at what UCLA is doing, and I think that they go, oh, well, they're going to have to sit in courts and work this thing out. It's like, I think that Gavin Newsom's trying to look like he's trying to make something happen. It's just like a lot of politicians who go, I'm going to get involved in your sports team and we're going to make something happen. And it's like, no, dude, like this thing is down the road. Scott has designs of stealing UCLA back and making it.
Yeah,
more
and I'm
more
not
relevant.
Saying sue him to get him back. I agree with you both that's not the answer, but what if you gave them like an unequal share of or a significant bump from other schools just to stay? Because that Southern California market's big. You've got to have more relevance in the conference with teams that are bankable, and that's just a possibility of one where UCLA could now become a pretty big fish maybe in a littler conference. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's possible. I also don't think that getting into unequal revenue sharing benefits the remaining members of the conference. And that's really who you have to worry about now if you're the commissioner, right? You can't start singling out Oregon, Washington, UCLA and saying you guys deserve more, especially when all this stuff is based on football.
Yeah.
I mean, UCLA football has achieved what in its history? Like, you got to go back to Jackie Robinson playing for the team to really care.
That's true.
And that's just, you cannot start being like, well, we need to be in L.A. We desperately need to be in L.A. All right. Well, if you love L.A. that much, if you love Southern California that much, then just do what he proposed and, you know, do a residency at SoFi Stadium and have a bunch of games there and let the Southern California kids promise them that you go to Oregon, you're still going to get two games a year in Southern California. You can't start saying UCLA, you're more valuable than everybody else, because the next thing that comes with that is Oregon stepping up and saying we want more, Washington stepping up and saying we want more, Utah saying, hey, we're right now the most stable, successful football team in this conference. Where's our extra money?
Yeah,
I just think it's a slippery slope.
What's your guy, former Oregon Duck, Jeff Schwartz, say about the whole thing? Does he like go, I want Oregon in the Big Ten, or is he going, these guys are a mess if they leave and leave the Pac-12 high and dry?
Well, look, he grew up a UCLA fan, ended up playing for the University of Oregon. He's more torn up about this than any of us are, because this is like, you know, he from childhood was a Pac-12 guy. Or Pac-10 guy and then Pac-12 guy. And so he's just like, man, this sucks. And he's right. It does suck, because I said this the day it was announced. The player and fan experience is not better with UCLA and USC going to the Big Ten. It's not. It's worse. By far, it's worse, because the travel sucks for fans and players alike. You're going to have less success or less immediate success as USC in the Big Ten than you would have had if you stayed in the Pac-12, which means less national prominence. If you're the third or fourth best team in the Big Ten instead of the best team in the Pac-12, or even the second best team in the Big Ten instead of the best team in the Pac-12, nationally, you're not as relevant. You're just not. And that sucks for everybody involved. Yeah. But people are so obsessed with the money these days, and they're so obsessed with the financial benefit of things like this. That is what drives the decisions 100%. The fan and player experience, especially for sports outside of football, is going to get significantly worse. Go ask players at Maryland. Go ask players at Rutgers. They don't care. They do not give a you-know-what about the fact that that $100 million is coming to Maryland and Rutgers, because they're getting their butts kicked week in and week out by Iowa and Michigan State and Wisconsin and Ohio State, and the list goes on, right? If USC goes to the Big Ten and USC becomes Michigan State, right? They slide right into that three spot. Is that a better situation for USC alum, fans, and players? The answer's no.
No, no. OC, we appreciate you coming on. Love when you're on the program here with us. You can hear him every day, Pac-12 Today. He and Jeff Schwartz chopping it up on SiriusXM Pac-12 Radio. Thanks for hanging out, OC. We'll talk to you again, man.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Absolutely.
Bye-bye. Right.
Let's take the break here. Should we?
Let's do it.
Jeremy says we should. All right. We'll come back. We've got more to talk about. I've got a Taysom Hill conversation around the corner, because everybody's been talking about how amazing of a teammate this guy is, because he says, look, for the good of the team, I'm not going to pursue this whole quarterback thing, all right? I'm not going to figure this thing out. But maybe it's a little bit different than that. How did Taysom Hill really feel about that move back to tight end, or back to basically not being that quarterback anymore for the Saints? We'll come back, talk about that. More to go. Unrivaled continues, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.